You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Those CNBC interviews must be like so much easier to do in person though.
Yeah.
Like you've done it before, right? Where you're like looking into the camera and
are we live?
Can't see what you're doing.
Oh, we're live. Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. I've done it with Tucker Carlson. I've done a couple of the Blaze, TV interviews as well. All remote. Tucker was insane because I was in Florida with my family. This is a great story. I don't think I've told this on the podcast before. We've got sitting down with Trey Sellers. Remote rip. First rip in some time. We've done Rabbit Hole Recap in the parlor here at Pub Key Bar and Media House in New York City. But Tucker, the story of Tucker was incredible. They called me that morning. It was Canadian truckers getting their Coinbase account shut down. And I'd been talking to one of Tucker's producers for a few months, educating her about Bitcoin. When Bitcoin stories would come up, she texted me like, what should we cover here? I'd be like, oh, this. That morning, I thought it was the same thing. Canadian truckers, like, what should we be focusing on? I sent her a few thoughts. She was like, do you want to come on the show and talk about it? I was like, I'd love to, but I'm in Florida. She was like, don't worry. We'll send a production van to your Airbnb. And so that's what it was. It was my father-in-law's, who I love to death. Love my father-in-law to death. I'm not a big fan of Tucker
for
Carlson.
For the record. For
not
the
a
record.
Big fan of Tucker Carlson. It was his 72nd birthday, and we were having dinner that night. And I had to go to my father-in-law on his 72nd birthday and say, hey, sir, thank you for giving me your daughter's hand in marriage. We're going to have to push your birthday dinner back so I can go on Tucker Carlson. And graciously, he accepted. But getting back to what you were getting at, the experience for that spot was literally getting the production van. They put some makeup on you, and they're like, all right, you're going to be on in 30 seconds, and you're just sitting there and you're waiting for the red light to go and goes on, the lights in your face, and you're talking to Tucker Carlson in the studio, and it's on, it's live, so you have to be on. And it was 90 seconds that felt like 2 hours, but that's what it was. That was the experience. And it was like, all right, your 2 minute spot's up, get out.
You could see him.
Yeah, I could see him on the TV.
Okay, so you actually had some cues to be able to play off of.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like staring at a camera with nothing to go on in terms of like facial cues and when is this guy going to stop talking and let me talk?
Well, that's the thing too. You had the delay when you're remote too. Yeah. So I was working with that. And so if you look at the interview, it's like 3 second delay on the answer the questions. But it was fun. We started this, I think, before we hit record here because we're talking about Andrew Hones. His appearance on CNBC a couple of weeks ago, in person, 10 minutes,
just absolutely nailed it.
He crushed it. And I was saying, I think Andrew is an incredible advocate for the space in that particular medium, CNBC. Joe Kernan, the best Bitcoin podcaster in the world, Joe Kernan, most popular.
He's becoming more based over time when it comes to like his Bitcoin views here. He's just like coming out.
You missed it.
Firing.
Yesterday.
You missed it.
The $500 billion asset manager. You missed it. Just.
And he said, yeah, I know. I missed it.
Yeah. But I
did. What else can you say to that?
We did have good public equities exposure, though. Didn't miss that. Yeah. We can hang our head on that.
Yeah.
People are missing it, though. That's what we're here tonight to talk about. It's not that people are missing it, but I think I was explaining before we hit record, this is the first episode since we crossed over the chasm of five-figure Bitcoin to six-figure Bitcoin. We're sitting here today, I believe we're at 102,000 after a slight dip below 100,000 yesterday. And this is pretty profound. I mean, we're talking about the Unchained, the letter that Joe wrote to Unchained clients about the journey that it took to 100,000. I think maybe the context of this conversation and what we're here to talk about tonight, like from your perspective, what has it been like being at Unchained for many years, getting people onboarded to Bitcoin, helping them develop the intestinal fortitude and the understanding to make them comfortable to hold through all the volatility that's existed over the last few years?
Yeah, I have like the best job in the world. You know, I get to talk to Bitcoiners on a daily basis and help them secure what is extremely substantial amounts of wealth in like the best asset on the planet, and an asset that they are not a lot of times comfortable actually holding themselves, even though they're starting to understand the importance of doing it. And having those conversations over the years, I mean, you really start to understand where people's fears are and what they're trying to accomplish in owning the asset, but then also like thinking about it for a multi-generational perspective for their family. And like the two questions that everybody has, or the two things that everybody's trying to solve for when they're talking to us, is how do I not lose my Bitcoin? Because I'm holding it myself and it's a bearer asset. And if I mess it up, it's gone and there's nothing you can do to get it back. Like, it is gone, right? That responsibility is great, but it also has extraordinary benefits in terms of sovereignty and being able to like truly own your wealth. And the second question, which is very related to that, is if something happens to me, how do I pass this thing down to my family? Right? Because it is multi-generational wealth. And if you, it doesn't matter what the paperwork says, right? It doesn't matter what your will or your trust documentation says. Again, if you can't access the Bitcoin because something has happened to those private keys that you're controlling, or your family doesn't know what to do, then the Bitcoin can't actually move, right? So, you know, we spend a lot of time with our clients working through those two main questions and getting people comfortable with holding very substantial amounts of Bitcoin in a way where they know that it's secure, where they can't make one mistake and just lose the Bitcoin, but they also have a plan in place for succession. The first few months and year really with a lot of our clients is spent really diving deep on those two questions. And so what's it like, you know, over the years at Unchained? I mean, we've grown so much, right? The business is certainly correlated to the price, and you know, when it's nothing but down over the course of 2022, things start slowing down. You know, there's no way to get around questioning like, okay, what's going to happen from here? You know, but we kept building, we kept adding clients, we kept educating people, and we kept getting ourselves into a position to be ready to really expand and explode to capture so much opportunity that's coming in this bull market. And so we're in kind of like an acceleration phase now, and we've grown up from what, when I joined, was still very much a kind of a startup feel to the company, to a very mature organization with like all of the control infrastructure that you would expect to have and want to have when you're helping people secure, you know, 100,000 plus Bitcoin.
That's funny. As you were explaining that, like the journey for Unchained particularly, it's crazy that we're back in this room. We're doing this event here tonight, and it just hit me while you were saying that. I remember, gosh, this had to be 2017 or 20, it's probably 2018. Dhruv came to town and did the first ever demo of the multi-sig 203 collaborative custody vault. I forget where it was, somewhere not too far from where we are right now in the West Village. I feel like it was a little southwest from where we are now. But it's funny, like, two of the 10 people that were at that demo, I think, are in this room right now. I remember it was me, Dhruv Armstrong, specifically AJ Scalia, Parker was there. But just remember, like, literally 6 years ago, it was before the vault was even a commercial product at Unchained.
Yeah.
Dhruv being like, we're thinking about a crazy way and a more secure way to help people secure their Bitcoin. And he basically demoed what would inevitably turn into the Unchained Collaborative Custody Vault for the first time. And
yeah. I mean, we've pioneered what collaborative custody really is over the years. And, you know, that comes with working through a whole bunch of design questions and operational questions. You know, it's not enough to just say, okay, we're going to leverage multi-sig, which is built into Bitcoin. And, you know, yeah, you can create this setup where you've got three keys and, you know, it's two of three multi-sig and we're holding a key alongside our clients. But that's really just a very small portion of what it takes to actually manage this at scale and create a situation where when clients have questions and issues, and when a key is compromised or something, that you've got the proper controls and operational overhead in place to be able to manage that concern that the client has, or that issue that they're trying to work through. It's not enough to just leverage the technology. You have to have this this, you know, infrastructure built around it in order to make it actually long-term viable and scalable in a way where you can serve thousands of clients with hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin.
Yeah. And I think what you guys provide is something that's been lost in a lot of areas of our life today, particularly when it comes to client-facing product building and interacting with a company, just any company, whether that be a fintech app, a banking app, whatever it may be. You guys are really bringing customer service back to the fore, where it's like, it's hands-on. We're going to get in the weeds with you, really help you develop the knowledge and the comfortability with securing your Bitcoin. And then not only that, but once you have it secured and you're confident in that, we're going to build out this slew of services, whether it's the inheritance protocol, the IRA, the lending desk, to allow you to use your Bitcoin in ways that are advantageous to you in the long run.
Yeah, we've always been very service-led, I would say, where we're kind of going above and beyond to make sure that our clients feel comfortable in the security setup, because they need to feel that comfort in order to want to do more with us and to grow, you know, their business that they're doing with us. So obviously that's a mutually beneficial relationship there, where we're making sure that the questions that our clients have and the fears that they have and the questions that their families have and all of that are being addressed in a way where they can feel confident, not just putting a half a Bitcoin in there as a test, but actually tens or hundreds of Bitcoin, thousands of Bitcoin, as some of our clients have.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest hurdles? Or actually, before we jump to that, maybe that's a leading question. Like, what are, like, your typical client, particularly that you're seeing these days? We see it at the podcast. We see it at 1031. When the price goes up, interest goes up, downloads go up, people reaching out,
yeah,
to ask questions about potentially investing goes up. I mean, coming to Unchained, what's the ratio of people that are completely new to Bitcoin versus people that understand Bitcoin and recognize, like, if I'm going to do this the right way, I need a partner like Unchained?
Typically, people who come to us already own Bitcoin, although that's becoming less and less true as the pie grows. But typically, people already own some Bitcoin. Typically, it's a fairly material amount, an amount that they're starting to get uncomfortable either holding themselves or holding on an exchange. And they recognize that they need some help to make sure that they take custody appropriately. So they're starting to recognize the value of actually holding the Bitcoin, but they're just not confident that they can do it themselves. And they don't want to feel like they're out on an island. And they don't want to spend thousands of hours, like, going down the technical rabbit holes to really understand the way that, you know, public private keys are working and the way that the hardware devices are working. They're looking for a partner in that journey to make sure that they're not going to screw it up, right? And so, you know, that's really the key value that we provide along that journey. It's very educational in helping people understand how Bitcoin works so they can feel confident in that. And then helping them explore what they can do to kind of maximize the value of the wealth that they're holding, and really get the most out of it.
So, Freaks, this episode of TFTC is brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Do you have an old IRA or 401k that isn't keeping up with Bitcoin? Roll over into an Unchained Bitcoin IRA and take advantage of Bitcoin's long-term potential while enjoying tax-deferred growth. With Unchained, you hold real Bitcoin and keep control of your keys, reducing counterparty risk through their collaborative custody model, while Unchained handles the tax forms. It's very important. They handle the tax forms. Get started now with no setup fees and no account fee for the first year. Not only is this the only standard Bitcoin IRA where you can control keys, unlike other Bitcoin IRAs, you can take distributions directly in Bitcoin, avoiding exchange fees. Set up a Roth or traditional Bitcoin IRA for no charge today at unchained.com/TFTC and experience true ownership of your retirement savings. Go to unchained.com/TFTC.
How big do you think this crossing of the chasm to six-figure Bitcoin is? Like, what do you think it means for Bitcoin? If any of your Have you had a lot of reach out from existing clients? Like, oh shit, didn't think we'd get here. Or maybe I knew we'd get here, maybe not this fast. What is
my,
the...
my phone, probably like yours, was like overheating the other night when we first crossed it. And it was a mix of clients and friends and, you know, Unchained team members and all that, which is a lot of fun. You know, I think when you cross 100,000, a million doesn't seem all that far off anymore, right? I think in the same way that when you cross 10,000, 100,000 didn't quite seem as far off anymore. And so it's more of a psychological switch where people's perspective can be broadened to say like, oh man, like there is actually a possibility that Bitcoin trades at $1 million at some point in the future, whether that's 5 years from now, 6 years from now, 10, 20, doesn't matter. Like the Overton window has shifted to include the possibility of $1 million Bitcoin.
Yeah. I think it's much harder to go from zero to 100,000 than it will be to go from 100,000.
The first 100,000 is definitely the hardest.
Does it feel like the end of the beginning to you? That's why I wrote the bent. I stayed up way too late when we crossed $100,000. 3 a.m., wrote a bent. And it was really like, I felt compelled to write that particular night because like, all right, this feels like a big deal. It feels like the first almost 16 years, we're basically 15 years and 11 months into Bitcoin being live as a protocol. We've had to fight consistent FUD. Bitcoin is a bubble. Bitcoin's tulips. Tether's manipulating Bitcoin. Bitcoin's too slow. It can't scale. Yeah,
you saw Goldstein's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, that was a powerful video.
It really was. He's been working on that for years. He showed that to me like 2 years ago.
I bet. I'm ready for
100,000 Bitcoin.
You don't really have to update it because all the FUD is the same.
Yeah.
There's nothing new under the sun when it comes to that.
And that's like, what? Like I feel like, again, like, am I over indexing the gravity of like $100,000 as a psychological marker? Because it seems like once you reach six figures, because that's what I said in the newsletter the other night, is like $100,000 is some, I mean, with inflation where it is, like maybe it's not as respectable as it was 4 or 5 years ago, but $100,000 respectable annual salary in many people's eyes.
I mean, to the wider public, they're not thinking about inflation-adjusted terms, really, anyway. So, you know, $100,000 is $100,000. But it's huge in terms of that psychological barrier.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge.
Where do you think we go from here in terms of... It's been established as a trillion-dollar market. We're at $2 trillion now. We talked about the primitives of like, you got to secure this asset first. It's what is at the core of Unchained, this multi-sig primitive, using it in the vaults, the lending, the IRA, trading desk straight into a vault. Like once you secure your Bitcoin, it gains value. We have this tipping point of recognition that Bitcoin is here to stay. Looks like the United States government has a, I don't know if I want to say high probability, but there's certainly a material probability of adopting Bitcoin as a strategic Bitcoin reserve. After this event tonight, I'm hopping on a plane to go to Bitcoin Mena in Abu Dhabi. And there's a lot of fervor around that particular conference and rumors being spread.
I heard some rumors.
Some sovereign wealth funds are going to announce some Bitcoin allocation. Like in the context of Unchained, like now that you have these primitives of custody and you have new financial services built on top of that, like, where do you think, like, the evolution of a Bitcoin company like Unchained goes into the future in the next 5, 10, 16 years?
I mean, I think all of the people who are building in Bitcoin are still working on the same problems that we've been working on for a long time, which is how do you make Bitcoin more accessible and easier to use? Because it's not all that easy. At least it hasn't been historically. It's, like, light years better than it was 4 or 5 years ago. You know, just, and I'll come back to custody and all that in a minute, but I think we make some meaningful progress on the medium of exchange type of use case over the next few years as more people come in and they want to, like, quote unquote, use Bitcoin, right? And we didn't have any of the tools that we have now 4 years ago going into 2020 in that bull run, right? Lightning Network was like barely functional.
Uh-huh.
None of the wallet infrastructure, node infrastructure, there were no businesses really supporting it or anything like that. Very few people held you know, enough Bitcoin to want to understand how to use it. You know, we didn't have Fold and River and Strike, who have integrated Lightning into their business model. It's just like so much easier to make that use case possible for people to take advantage of. And so I actually think we're going to see a lot of ground gained in medium of exchange over the next few years, which is hugely bullish in my mind. On the store value mechanism, I mean, it's very clear that that is the primary function of Bitcoin at this point. And it really does solve the biggest problem, at least in the Western world, that we have, right? Which is just that your money is, the dollar is designed to lose value and Bitcoin is designed to gain value. And so people will just naturally move capital in that direction. And we need to make that as easy as possible for them to get to the lowest level of the stack as possible. And that's what Unchained does, right? Like, we operate at the base layer of the stack when it comes to Bitcoin adoption. And we'll be working on broadening the top of funnel and the different types of people that we can serve. But ultimately, it needs to drive down to that base layer where people are actually taking sovereign control over their money, or at least they start to understand how they can go down that path.
This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that currency runs on our risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores, connect your wallets or custodial accounts, and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to Zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC, $40 off. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Salt of the Earth. You got to be hydrating, freaks. And while you're hydrating, you got to be getting your electrolytes. This is the best electrolytes mix that I've ever come into contact with. Pink Himalayan salt with calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, no sugar. It tastes incredible. My favorite is the orange and the pink lemonade. Go to drinksote.com. That's drinksote.com. Use the code TFTC when you make your purchase and you'll get 15% off. I'm telling you, get on it, freaks. You're going to love this stuff.
And I mean, many people would take this the wrong way, but I think it's just like objectively true. I'm trying to think of how to say this without pissing too many people off, but I mean, it's been talked about. Justin Moon has talked about it on this show a lot, but like not ideally, but if we're being honest with ourselves, like the most impactful adoption is going to come from people with insane amounts of wealth who are worried about that wealth dissolving because of the inflation of the dollar and recognizing this is a better asset. Obviously, you want it from both sides of the spectrum. You want the grassroots, individual adoption, like middle-class people adopting Bitcoin as a savings technology. But when it comes to the impact on the price and whether you like it or not, validation for the asset itself, like it's important that large amounts of capital recognize that Bitcoin is a superior store value asset and act accordingly.
Bitcoin is savings technology, and so you need savings accumulated in order to move into Bitcoin, right? Like, so it makes sense that the people with the most accumulated savings or accumulated capital are going to be people who are kind of leading the charge in moving a large amount of capital into the asset. But I think like that's how a lot of technology and a lot of different protocols and networks are adopted anyway. There stands to reason that Bitcoin would be, you know, following that same type of shape. But we're entering, in my mind, into like the acceleration part of that S curve of adoption, right? That 100K barrier being broken starts to like turn the S curve upward in a extremely...
We were talking about this earlier. Super cycle? Let's get hand up. Super cycle, yes or no, Joe?
We're at the beginning.
Super cycle, yes. Joe's saying for the heck of it.
What the fuck is a super cycle?
Thomas is asking what the fuck a super cycle is. Suzu, you remember Suzu? Remember that guy?
Of course, but what does it mean?
It's all a super cycle.
That sounds really fun. I want it.
Humanity?
He's got,
the human super cycle?
I think in terms of you have steady adoption, steady price drift upwards without the typical 4-year price cycles we've seen.
Heat death.
We're still going to see volatility.
Yes or no?
I don't know what it is.
Thomas is saying he doesn't know. He's refusing.
There's no clear definition. Feel free to.
Yes.
You can define it and then, you know, answer the question based on your own definition. That's a good way to do it.
It will continue to go up and then it's like, you know, peak and valley volatility.
Okay. No super cycle then. So that's a no from Thomas. I could see it being the other way.
I mean,
if the nation states adopt it.
What else? Yeah, so if you're defining it in terms of price, like there's definitely going to be volatility. If you're defining it in terms of just the wave of adoption that's happening, we're in the super cycle.
Yeah, we were talking about like you want the high net worth individuals recognizing Bitcoin as a viable savings technology, store value asset. Nation states are pretty big pools of liquidity, and their treasury reserves are pretty big savings accounts, if you will. Yeah. Actually, not savings accounts. There's a lot of it is debt, but yeah. You can use Bitcoin to turn it into a proper savings account.
And it sounds like they might.
It sounds like they are. This guy had President Trump in here using Bitcoin.
We all did that.
We all did that.
That was a community effort.
That was fun. But again, a lot of like we started this too. We started talking about Andrew's interview on CNBC because we were saying how good Joe Kernan has become at basically thwarting off naysayers. Like, oh, you missed it. And something I've observed you really leaning into is trying to get the FIRE movement, is it financially independent, retire early, mm-hmm. To recognize that Bitcoin is a much preferable way to achieve your FIRE goals compared to something like Airbnb real estate or something like that.
Yeah, Bitcoin fits really nicely into a FIRE framework.
So explain the FIRE framework to people, and what is your pitch to the FIRE stands out there, many of which are denying the possibility for Bitcoin to fit into that framework.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of skepticism in the past in the financial independence or personal finance, generally speaking, world. So financial independence, retire early is essentially a framework of personal finance that is very intentional about controlling expenses for things that really only provide value and that making sure you're not wasting money and taking whatever excess earnings that you have and what they would call invest those savings as much as possible, as quickly as possible, to get you to a place where you've got a portfolio that is large enough to sustain whatever your expenses are or you expect them to be on an annual basis. And when you get to a portfolio large enough, you can start to draw down on that and live off of dividends and, you know, other, you can live off of the portfolio and the assets that you've built up in order to sustain your lifestyle. Doing so means you don't have to work, because you've built up enough assets that you'll never run out, or at least it's going to sustain you for a 30-year period or a 40-year period into the future. And so when you get to that place, you're financially independent, you can quit your job, you can go work on passion projects, you can do whatever you want to do and not be beholden to a paycheck that you've got coming from a boss you don't like and dealing with the commute and all of that kind of thing, right? And so, you know, one of the things that I was honing on there is that the FIRE community really focuses on this idea of saving and investing, but they're not actually investing. They think they're investing. They talk about it as if it's investing, but really what they're doing is just building a savings portfolio. What do I mean by that? Well, most FIRE practitioners are using index funds in the stock market, the S&P 500 or something like the Vanguard Total Market Index Fund, VTI, or VTSAX is like the mutual fund version of that. And they're just stacking as much of that index as possible. But there's no like analysis on a particular company. the price to earnings ratio, debt to equity, like all of the things that you would think about as important metrics to understand whether or not an asset is overvalued or undervalued. They're just stacking assets as quickly as possible. Well, that's what you're doing if you bring Bitcoin into your framework, except you're using an asset that is fundamentally better, that has a better profile for access, for liquidity, for just being able to go up faster because it's perfectly fixed in supply. And so, you know, the reason that the FIRE framework works, even when you're using stocks, is because the practitioners understand that they can't hold on to cash. So they've got to invest their money. Their cost of living is constantly going up. And so if you're able to build this portfolio, you can sustain those expenses going forward. That's a very intuitive understanding of the exact same problems that you and I and all the Bitcoiners understand very explicitly, because we spend time actually studying the monetary system and the financial system that creates this debt-based money that we're all forced to live on, that constantly loses purchasing power. And so by bringing Bitcoin into your framework, even just a little bit, you can start to accelerate your path to financial independence and gain, you can gain financial independence beyond just the use case of covering your expenses, but actually taking full control of your wealth. So it's like this dual purpose ability of not only controlling your lifestyle and being able to not be beholden to a job, but then also actually having full control over your wealth. So, you know, once you recognize Bitcoin as a superior asset for that purpose, it makes sense to just start bringing that into your framework. And then ultimately, like, as we all know, the more you understand Bitcoin, the more you think that is the only place that your excess cash flows need to go.
Yeah, it's the only framework necessary. And this, I mean, a couple questions. How's it been received by many in the FIRE community? Number one. Number two, I gave a presentation at my rival high school. Funnily enough, my alma mater has not asked me to give a presentation, but my rival has. And that was, I think, one of the aha things for the gentleman in that class. Was another all-boys school. Was at the end of the chart, I had Jesse Myers's total asset value in the different buckets, and I explained the concept of monetary premium to the students. And I think I visibly saw some kids like, oh crap, I never thought of it that way. Like, why do you think stocks are that high? And like you said, people are just passively investing into indexes and not really doing the diligence on individual stocks, their debt to equity ratio, revenues, cash flow, profits, to actually underwrite and allocate capital based off of what many would deem to be necessary benchmarks and checkboxes to check off before you actually invest capital into a business. You're supposed to be investing into fundamentals, cash flows, profits, etc. We've gotten completely away from that, and a lot of investing is just throwing it in these passive funds. And
yeah, you're using the index as a savings vehicle.
Yeah.
It is not an investment.
And how much monetary premium, like, the point I'm trying to be a little controversial here for the FIRE community is, like, if Bitcoin adoption continues and people recognize that this extremely scarce asset, much easier to underwrite, incredibly transparent, you can verify everything on your own, you don't have to go meet with the management team to understand their future strategy or how they're going to invest in R&D and what they're going to do. You just know there's 21 million Bitcoin, new supplies issued every 10 minutes. That issuance gets cut every 210,000 blocks. Between then, you have a difficulty adjustment that affects how easy or hard it is to mine every 2 weeks, every 2016 blocks. Like, you know what Bitcoin is, and it is a superior savings vehicle. And for the FIRE community, using the index strategy specifically, like, at some point, and it could be happening now, people are going to recognize, like, I am using these indexes as a vehicle for savings, and it's an inferior vehicle now that I know what Bitcoin is. And, like, how many people in the FIRE community that are running this are going to get completely blown out as people recognize that there's way too much monetary premium in these passive indexes and just flow it into Bitcoin?
I don't know that they get blown out.
Okay.
I'm not, like, so bearish on the stock market.
Everybody else must suffer, Trey. I'm kidding.
I mean, they're certainly going to underperform relative to Bitcoin, right? Like, the stock market will continue to go down toward zero BTC over a long time horizon. We just broke out into a brand new fresh low of, you know, the S&P versus Bitcoin. So that will continue to happen, but that doesn't mean in fiat terms that they're going to continue to do poorly if they just follow that same strategy. Like, I'm still fundamentally bullish on like the traditional FIRE approach. Mm-hmm. It's just that you're leaving a lot on the table, you know, and you're constraining yourself to assets that are permissioned, that you have to, you know, ask for permission to use, that are really only accessible to people in the US. So that's another point that I like to make is, you know, the S&P, the US stock market has outperformed the rest of the globe in terms of you know, the returns that it's been able to provide because the US is a global leader. But if you're somewhere else in the world, you don't necessarily have access to any stock market at all, let alone the S&P. So Bitcoin is really the only choice if you want to have a savings asset that everybody has access to, right? So that's another point. I think people are, there are certainly some people who are starting to come around to Bitcoin as an okay fit to incorporate into a FIRE framework. You're starting to see that ice thaw a little bit in certain pockets. And what I've discovered in being vocal about this and like starting my newsletter, you know, on Substack and all that, is that there are a lot of Bitcoiners who have come from a similar journey that I did, which is they were already doing like a FIRE type approach, and they too found Bitcoin as a superior asset to incorporate into that framework. And they too are looking for other people to like share those ideas with. And they too are wanting to help the traditional FIRE movement to actually understand this, because it does fit so nicely there. So I think we're starting to make some headway. We're never going to see Mr. Money Mustache come out and say he was wrong to call Bitcoin
Money Mustache.
Yeah, Mr. Yeah.
Mall Strip guy is another one, isn't he? Or strip mall guy.
Strip mall guy.
Strip mall
guy.
Oh,
yeah. I think I put him on blast on Twitter with my massive following there. You know, like Mr. Money Mustache, I wrote about this in the very first issue of my newsletter. He wrote this thing in January of 2018, Why Bitcoin is Stupid. And, you know, it's all the same.
Very easy to do.
It's all the same.
Bitcoin's down like 20% from a blow-off top.
It had just reached 20,000, dropped 50%, and then it was back on the way up to like test those highs, and it was like 14,000 at the time. And, you know, it's all the same garbage FUD that we've all heard a million times, Beanie Babies and all this stuff, right? So there's no like serious inquiry into what Bitcoin is and what problem it actually solves, even though it solves the exact problem that you're using the index for, you know, solves. But like a guy like that is not going to come out and be like, oh yeah, looks, turns out I was wrong to write why Bitcoin is stupid. But there are others who are kind of coming around to recognizing that, hey, maybe this does deserve at least a small allocation in a portfolio, and then start to learn about it, right? It's like everybody else, right? We all go through that journey,
yeah,
where you get a little taste, and then you watch the price a little bit, and then you think, oh, well, this is kind of interesting, and your mind starts to open up to all the things that we talk about on a daily basis in terms of the problems that Bitcoin solves.
Yeah, a lot of these people have the yuppie elite problem.
For sure.
Where it almost seems too good to be true, too. Is that a problem that you, or not a problem, but like, is that something you have to explain to people? Like, so I just buy this one asset and people are going to adopt it for the same reasons. It's scarce, distributed.
It certainly does sound more sophisticated to say that you are investing, that you're an investor, mm-hmm, as opposed to just saving in good money, you mm-hmm know? So I think maybe there's a little bit of that. The FIRE community, I wouldn't call like, they typically, like the general practitioners there are not like the yuppie elite in that they're like your super high IQ, Harvard yeah type people. It's more like everyday people who are, you know, probably don't make a whole lot of money, but they're, again, being very intentional about the way that they spend that money so that they can widen the gap between their income and their expenses, and then start to put money away because they don't like the job that they're working anyway, right? You know, there aren't that many people who can say what I can say at the beginning of this rip here, that they love what they do, right? There just aren't. And so it's a nice thing to be able to go after something with a dedicated and intentional framework that has an extremely high chance for success to kind of get you ahead of the game.
Yeah. And it's important. If you don't like what you do, trying to find a way out is extremely important. And that's what, like, going back to like Fire, like the whole reason for Fire existing is to do that. And like Bitcoin, for me personally, that is exactly what it has allowed me to do. No sneezing, Joe, please. I mean, got into it in college, stayed humble, stacked sats a little bit every paycheck, and got to the point where I was able to get some breathing room to figure out what I wanted to do. Started the newsletter, started this podcast, and Bitcoin was a pivotal tool in creating that personal liberation for me to go pursue my passions and not have to sit in a cube pulling data from Bloomberg and running return analysis and talking to funds about their strategies. I mean, it was interesting, but
I was buried in spreadsheets for quite a few years, for
miss,
sure.
I did not miss the Excel spreadsheets.
I actually enjoyed it.
Did you?
I was a bit of an Excel whiz, and I liked doing the coding stuff.
Yeah, the VLOOKUPs. I couldn't make a VLOOKUP today if you asked me to. But it did feel powerful when you successfully created a workable VLOOKUP. Let's talk about tonight. Signature clients.
Here. Yes, sir.
This is something that you guys have rolled out and really leaned into. Rolled out a while ago, but really leaned into it. The last 6 months, we have an event for signature clients at PubGate tonight. There's another part of the special hands-on touch you guys are bringing to the market is having this white glove service where you're there to not only educate people, make sure they have the support that they need, but helping further their education and get them together with like-minded individuals to spitball ideas and confirm with each other that they're not crazy for getting into this crazy internet money. I've seen this behind the scenes, not only at TFTC, but 1031. It seems like people are really liking the signature product specifically.
Yeah, it's been about a year and a half since we have essentially elevated the brand on the service that we provide to a level that is more all-encompassing, right? So signature has become the standard for how a lot of people come into Unchained and get integrated into their setup on their custody side, and then answering that succession planning question in those first few months. And whether you want to explore in very deep conversations what that succession plan looks like, and bringing family into that conversation, bringing estate attorneys into that conversation to make sure everybody just understands what this model is and that you can feel really confident that it's going to work if something happens to you, people really like to go down that rabbit hole. A lot of people are hesitant on putting large amounts of Bitcoin into something that's new or a new setup, and they want to really explore the technical aspects there. So, you know, Signature is an all-inclusive, all-encompassing experience in not only helping you onboard into Unchained and really understand how this collaborative custody model works and get that succession plan in place, but then providing you with dedicated support in an ongoing fashion from somebody who is a single point of contact with a team behind them in case you have like priority issues that you need to have addressed from a technical perspective, in case you want to explore some of the educational aspects of Bitcoin and really like go down whatever rabbit holes you'd like to do there. And then we have a whole bunch of other benefits that are included in the signature service as well. You get reduced trading fees if you're using our trading desk. All of the accounts that you have with us, which would normally be paid for in kind of an a la carte manner, are included: personal accounts, trust accounts, IRA accounts, right? If you are, and most of our clients do have like multiple contexts that they are securing Bitcoin in, right? They've got Bitcoin that's in their personal name. They've got an IRA that they've rolled from the traditional financial system.
Business account.
They've got businesses that they are building Bitcoin treasuries with. And so, you know, we want to make sure there's an option for people to just take care of everything with like the highest touch service that you could possibly have. And that's what we are really leading with as we are facing the market these days. And there's huge, huge demand for it. My guys, David and James and Jared, who are like, you know, kind of on the front lines of supporting these clients, will attest to the fact that they are just absolutely slammed with the amount of demand that we've had for having this high touch service. And we're going to continue to stack as much value into that experience as we possibly can, because people love it so much. And then just to kind of bring it back to tonight, Unchained, I'm not afraid to say, has had a very good reputation for the parties that we throw, the private events that we throw, whether it's at like conferences and that kind of thing. They're always like very, very well done. And people really love them. Like, we always get really good feedback. And so in doing those events, they're typically like private invite only type of events. And so all of our signature clients get invites to those, like first right of refusal, to make sure if they want to attend, they've got an invite there. And then from there, we work to build some other invites from people who are in the area wherever we are. So like a couple months ago, we were out in LA and did something out there, and all of our signature clients are invited to that. We have this event tonight here at PubKey. All of our signature clients are invited to that. And then on a monthly basis, we do virtual events as well. So bring in thought leaders in the space to talk to them in like kind of like a private podcast where they can ask questions and get some kind of exclusive, you know, alpha that these people are able to provide in a much more intimate setting. So anything that you want in your Bitcoin journey, that signature experience is built and designed to give to you. And it's extremely popular, as I mentioned, for people who are new to Unchained and coming in and really want to make sure that they're taking care of all of the loose ends that they might have in getting that custody set up and that succession plan set up and accessing the financial services that we provide.
Yeah. And it's great. We see this at 1031 too with our tribe, where we do quarterly events, whether that's in person or virtually. And it's to get LPs and founders in front of each other. Founders basically say what they're building, and the LPs get an opportunity to ask founders questions and feel like they're actually learning about what's happening behind the scenes, cutting edge stuff. And that's the one really cool thing that I've just observed over the last 3 years through our journey at 1031 is how, like, once somebody catches the Bitcoin bug, they want to learn as much as they. It's like the only, not that I played with many other assets since I was 22, but I did work at a fund, and like, we had LPs at that fund, and I don't think anybody cared about hopping on a call with somebody running a commodity trading advisor fund, learning about their momentum strategy or their trend following strategy. But at 1031, like, the LPs are maniacally like focused on learning as much as they can and getting exposure to as many thought leaders in the space, just because they want to continue to build that knowledge. There's something contagious about it. Like, once you catch the bug, it's like, I need to learn everything.
Yeah, it's Bitcoin is endlessly fascinating. It touches so much around. It touches so many different aspects of the way that we live our lives, economics and politics and money, which touches everything in and of itself, right? And then, you know, we see it bleed into the decisions that we're making on a personal basis when it comes to health and exercise and all that kind of thing. So yeah, people like they start to develop that bit of, it sounds bad to say it, like a mind virus, but it really starts to take over the way that your thought process works. And yeah, people like to talk to other people who have a similar experience there and exploring those same similar topics.
Yeah. Yeah, almost cult-like, if you will. Embrace the cult-like nature of Bitcoin, people. Embrace it. It's natural. I'm kidding. But we got to end here in about 7 minutes. Did you see Lloyd Blankenfein tweeting about Bitcoin?
I did. I worked for Goldman Sachs for 3 years.
What did you think about your old boss's thoughts on Bitcoin?
What was the exact quote?
I think he was like, Trump... I don't see how Trump could be against BRICS currencies trying to I'm paraphrasing here, compete with the U.S. dollar reserve system, and out of the other side of his mouth, be supportive of Bitcoin as a strategic reserve asset.
Yeah, because Bitcoin is
implicitly acknowledging that it competes with the dollar.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. You know, some people say the quiet part out loud when they shouldn't, you know, and that's what Lloyd did there. He's definitely admitting that this is something that could be, you know, play into the strategic approach that different countries take to geopolitics, right? Putin, same day, was it the same day?
Mm-hmm.
The other day, right? Saying that maybe who can stop Bitcoin? Nobody.
Yeah.
Like this acknowledgement that not only are leaders of nations recognizing the value of Bitcoin and what it can do, but implicitly saying that they've already been stacking. I mean, Putin has all but come out and said, like, Russia is stacking sats.
And I think that particular acknowledgement yesterday on stage, wherever he was a shot across the bow of Trump, who's been very vocally posturing towards BRICS countries, particularly, like, don't try to create a competing reserve currency. The dollar, we will tariff the hell out of you and make sure that your life is miserable. And meanwhile, here in the United States, I mean, part of that strategy BRICS has been choreographing for the last few years has been, we're going to try to shift to maybe an SDR, but like a currency with gold at its core. And you can look at the numbers. Central banks of Russia and China particularly have been accumulating a butt ton of gold over the last decade. And if you look at the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve Act put forward by Cynthia Lummis, there is an overt attempt to, if that bill gets passed, make sure that the Fed gives the U.S. government their gold certificates back, which are currently priced at $42, mark them to market,
yeah, just
and sell the
up.
Gold to buy Bitcoin, which would impede the BRICS countries' attempt to go build this gold-backed currency, because if the U.S. is dumping its gold for Bitcoin, it's going to be bad for the price of gold and good for the price of Bitcoin. I think Putin, what he was saying on stage yesterday, was just like a slight, like, hey, we're paying attention to Bitcoin too. Like, we can play in that game.
Yeah,
if absolutely. That's the direction you want to go in.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I can't honestly believe, I don't think any of us could have believed like 3-4 years ago that we would be in the position that we are now with the U.S. seriously considering this strategic Bitcoin reserve, and with Putin and all these other global leaders adopting Bitcoin, essentially. Like, again, we're in the super cycle here in terms of adoption.
Yeah.
The price will be volatile, but
we'll see. Well, that's what, actually, it's a good segue into the chat we're about to have with Andrew. I think that's and Joe and I were sharing notes on questions asked, but I think you guys have the lending desk, you use Bitcoin as collateral, one-year duration. What Andrew and Battery are doing and sort of trying to do the same thing, use Bitcoin as collateral for these commercial real estate deals, but extend the duration to a decade. And that's one thing I'm very curious to see this cycle particularly, is can Battery and others basically prove this model and get others to recognize that this is probably a better way to finance these types of real estate deals and many other types of structured credit products that exist out there. And do they get enough demand to pull enough Bitcoin off the market into these structured credit products for 10, 20, 30 year durations? That is a type of demand lever that hasn't existed in the past and is beginning to emerge this time around.
I love what Battery is doing and how they're pioneering that. It's going to be super interesting to see how Bitcoin can worm its way into various different credit products as the pristine collateral that it is, you know. And it is going to find its way into a number of different financial products that we haven't seen yet. You've got Wall Street coming to the game with their, you know, the quant bros on Wall Street, like, figuring out how to incorporate the volatility that comes with Bitcoin, and, you know, all the different aspects that make it good collateral into this, like, fiat financial infrastructure. And there's going to be some interesting ideas that come up. Some of them are probably going to blow up, and that will bring some fireworks and some fun for us. But
if Saylor tries to give his Bitcoin to JP Morgan again, a 5% yield, like, he could get into some trouble there. He might win it. Michael, if you're listening, think twice about that.
Definitely don't go all in with that strategy.
I don't think I need to give Michael Saylor advice, but think about it, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But this does come full circle, TradFi getting in. The reason I brought up Lloyd Blankenfein, that's the way I've always envisioned Unchained, especially with the calculated progression of the product offering over time, collaborative custody, lending desk, trading desk, IRA, inheritance, getting into financial planning with sound advisory. Like, you can squint and see Unchained becoming a Goldman Sachs-like entity under a Bitcoin standard. What are your thoughts on the potential for that?
I think we are set up to help people secure material amounts of Bitcoin that is their generational wealth, and to access financial services that are built around that Bitcoin in new and novel ways that take advantage of the unique properties of Bitcoin. You know, I think Wall Street comes in and they take Bitcoin and they kind of try to like jam it into the fiat world and are not really taking into consideration what they could do with the actual asset and the properties that it holds. We take the opposite approach, where we lean into the fundamental properties that Bitcoin has. We lean into the ability of using multi-sig for various different purposes. And we purposely build products that leverage those native properties in ways that Wall Street can't do, because they're not willing to go down to that base layer, right? So I think, you know, we're going to continue to pioneer in that regard. And, you know, bring it back to a little bit of a shill for an upcoming event that we have on Tuesday. We are doing this online, massive online event, helping people think about how they can get their Bitcoin house in order for 2025. We're at the beginning of the super cycle. You just said it. Thomas definitely believes it.
Thomas must have left. No, he's in the corner giving us a thumbs up. He's in.
Yep. And, you know, as we move into this new regime of six-figure Bitcoin, you need to be thinking about how you are protecting your wealth in Bitcoin that you already own, how you're going to acquire more of it over time, and what that succession plan looks like. And that's what we do on a daily basis. We help our clients get their Bitcoin house in order, whether it's custody and security, whether it's succession planning, whether it is thinking about making their annual contribution to their IRA that they're moving into Bitcoin. We recently launched a donor advised fund product where people can donate Bitcoin in this DAF structure, which follows all the same rules as a traditional DAF, with the exception that you can actually hold one of the three keys in a collaborative custody model along with the DAF administrator and see for yourself that the Bitcoin hasn't been sold for dollars, that you can take the same tax benefits in the current year and then direct those funds as and when you see fit. It's a new and novel way to approach an old product that is extremely popular, and we've gotten tons and tons of people reaching out to us saying, oh, I love that model. I would love to be able to take advantage of, making these donations, take the tax benefit today, direct that money in the future. And in the meantime, the beneficiaries of those, whenever you're directing that money, get all the upside of Bitcoin, right? Because it's just sitting there waiting for this super cycle to play out. And maybe you make a $500,000 donation, and by the time you're giving the money away, it's $5 million, right? Pretty powerful stuff there. So just a perfect example of how we build from the base layer. We use Bitcoin's native properties to create new and novel ways of approaching people's generational wealth and giving them the tools to get their Bitcoin house in order.
Yeah. And that's going to be led by Tur and Jeff Andrew.
Yeah, some OG guys Tur has been like...
Tur was out there beating the drum at $100 Bitcoin, saying it's going to 100,000, it's going to a million.
Tur has absolutely nailed the last like three cycles, like right at the bottom. If you're not following or listening to what Tur has to say, like, you are really missing out. You need to absolutely start with this event. You can go to the website and sign up for that, register for that. And then Jeff Vandrew is like one of the smartest dudes I know. He helped us build this IRA product that we've had for the last 3 years. He has a wealth of knowledge around the tax side and the legal side, and can really answer a lot of those questions from a technical perspective that people have around how they're managing their wealth there. And so it's a really like dynamic duo that will be presenting on Tuesday, December 10th, I think it is, to, you know, help kind of kick off the new year in the right way.
Yeah. And if you don't want to go find it, you can go to unchained.com/TFTC. I checked. That that URL is going straight to the onboarding for this online event.
There we go.
Go check it out. Let's go have some beers. Let's enjoy our Friday night. Let's enjoy Bitcoin. Are we still over 100K?
Where are we at?
100K.
I think we see new all-time high during the event. Do we not?
100.8
right now. 100.8. What? Oh,
okay. Could happen. All right. It's a Friday night.
All right.
You know what?
It's fair game.
Let's go do it, Trey. It's been a pleasure, sir.
Been a pleasure.
We got to do it. Appreciate at TFTC it. Studios. We can't... We can't just meet here. I mean, it's great meeting here at PubKey Media House, the parlor at PubKey.
I'm happy to anytime, man.
We gotta do it at the Commons the next time you're in Austin.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's go have some fun.
All right.
Peace and love.